Hello and welcome to the Newsmakers Podcast. Today we're talking about the commercial market with Bud Hammer, president of Atlantic Westchester. They're an HVAC service company. We're talking about the major trends in the HVAC commercial market. We hope you enjoy the conversation. And I'm going to bring in Bud Hammer from Atlantic Westchester. Thanks for joining us today, Bud.
Well, thank you, Kyle. I'm very honored to be here.
Why don't you give our listeners a little background? Tell us a little bit about yourself and your business.
Well, Atlantic Westchester is a New York metropolitan area-based commercial service and maintenance company focused on industrial, institutional, and commercial facilities. We do not do what we consider the three R's in our business, which are restaurants, residential, and or retail. We've been a service contractor since the early 1960s, and my family purchased the company in 1979. I've grown up in this industry and have worked with this company full-time since 1989, and my wife joined the company. She's a CPA running the financial side since 1994, so she and I have worked together for about 25 years. In the late 1990s, my parents, who were the proprietors at the time, essentially retired, and my wife and I have been running the business now for just over 20 years.
That's impressive. If I was working with my wife for 25 years, I'm not sure we'd still be married. So congratulations on
that.
Well,
thank you very much. Yes, she and I have been married for several years and worked together for several years. So combined, we've been together for about 100, as I tell people.
All right, let's get into some industry questions now. What are some of the top trends you're seeing in the commercial market?
Technology. Technology all over the place, whether equipment that's been existing for a while is being retrofitted to make it run more efficiently, or new equipment is being put in with onboard microprocessors or diagnostics or plug-and-play capable control systems that will operate with legacy systems and buildings through translators and whatnot. Technology is, in my opinion, the number one impactful change in this industry that is gaining serious momentum.
Obviously, the Internet of Things is a big part of that. How's that changing the industry?
Well, the Internet of Things, you know, I'm sure as you can appreciate, is kind of a general statement, but it applies to so many things. Transparency, visibility, being able to actually measure and manage energy consumption, I'm seeing a trend that is being paid attention to. And in the facilities management realm, as younger people become more involved and experienced and I guess better educated about the horsepower that some of them are sitting on in some of their facilities, the need and desire for visibility into what their systems are doing has become a big thing. People are understanding that technology has a tremendous amount of leverage and power, so that the data analytics and metrics can all be kind of chopped up and looked at on a variety of different levels. And I'm fascinated by it and happy to be a part of this whole transformation of our industry.
Okay, great. And then what areas of the market do you see growing in 2019? Obviously, you might not be able to speak to the three R's, but probably all the rest of them.
Well, we focus on service and maintenance and always have. We do some renovation and construction work, but as sort of a secondary side of our business with usually existing clients or on a referral basis. So we are not in what I would consider the new plan and spec construction market, although after new buildings have either been erected or renovated, sometimes we do inherent systems for service and maintenance. So we kind of see some of the cutting edge technology of what's being built out there. The really cool thing about what it is that we do is that we work in buildings that range from over 100 years old to only a couple of years old. So we see a wide gamut of what's out there. And The unfortunate thing is, Kyle, and I guess, you know, there's a reason for the cliche. Things aren't built the way they used to be, and it's an unfortunate thing because money drives a lot of decisions. So we see some buildings that have been built very, very well and some buildings that have not. So we spend a lot of time trying to fine-tune things. You know, value engineering has been a big buzzword in our industry over the last probably 10 or 15 years. And the first thing usually to get cut out of a construction project is the commissioning process, which being in the service and maintenance business, it's actually been a good feeder for our growth in our maintenance base or on the remediation side, because we're taking buildings that aren't necessarily tuned very well nor working properly, and we're getting opportunities to make them work better. So our logo right now is, or motto, we make buildings smarter.
There you go. Is Douglas playing a role in that for you guys? Obviously, they've grown in market share lately, and they're in the news. Kind of give your 2 cents on that side of the market.
Variable refrigerant flow systems are growing, it seems, at an exponential rate. They are fantastic for zoning. They offer ranges of comfort in simultaneous heating and cooling systems. So if a core of a building needs cooling and the perimeter needs heat in the wintertime, a VRF system can satisfy both while still actually doing a very efficient job of it, because in effect you're dealing with heat reclaim. So VRF systems, I think, have become an engineer's friend, and we're seeing them all over the place. So yeah, there's good stuff with the growth in that whole market. However, there's also a downside to it. We live in a colder climate, and the design engineering part of those systems is crucial. We've dealt with a couple of buildings during these polar vortex periods of time in the wintertime that I didn't really remember as I was growing up as a kid, but now that I'm an adult in this industry, we seem to have these cold snaps that are in single digits and they last for a while, and VRF systems sometimes struggle. So I think it's a great answer to a lot of situations, but the design is critical so that the right equipment is put in the right application. VRF systems do have low temperature applications for the heating side, but it's just a matter of, you know, whether or not the engineer and the contractor are on the same page as far as selecting and installing the right equipment.
Sure. No, it's interesting. Besides workforce development, because it seems like everyone has trouble finding people, what is the biggest...
You mean the labor shortage?
The labor shortage, yes. Let's say that didn't exist. What would be the biggest issue affecting the HVAC industry?
Awareness on the buyer side. I spend a lot of time educating prospects and existing clients about what it is that we work on. Oftentimes our equipment is in the basement, in the ceiling, or on the roof, and it's out of sight. So it's hard to have somebody that may or may not really understand what it is that we're doing for them gain an appreciation for the difference between the good, the bad, and the ugly. And we spend a lot of our time trying to collaborate with our clients, work as their partners, and give them the reality of whatever situation is in their building. Many of our buildings work pretty well, but I can't say that for all. And the ones that don't work well, we usually figure out why. Sometimes it's a design issue, or it was an installation issue. Not always are installations done with service in mind, as we've done a lot of work in schools, and I remember a certain case where there was a built-up modular air handler that was installed above a ceiling next to a chiller mechanical room, and there were two concrete block walls that went from the floor all the way up to the roof deck on either side of this air handler. And upon a visitation to the building and kind of observing this equipment, my first thought was, well, how are we going to fix the fan shaft if it ever has to be replaced? Because we're going to have to blow a hole in the wall to get a new one in. And the person in the school district said, geez, I guess they didn't think about that when they designed it. And I said, well, there you go. A lot of that stuff isn't thought about because it's brand new equipment. Right. And why am I talking about when it's going to break? But I'm the one who gets the phone call.
Right. No, makes sense.
So awareness, education, experience, again, living in a cold climate, in buildings that require outside air ventilation, which is, of course, ventilation code, there's oftentimes heating systems that have water in them that are in close proximity to outside air intakes. And unless you have some sort of protection, whether it's a generator should the power go down in the building, or it's some sort of antifreeze, chances are one day something's going to freeze in that building. And again, we're the ones that get the phone call. So while I understand that it's important to ventilate a building, it's not near the top of my list to put a coil with water in it close to outside air, which is just asking for potential disaster.
Right. Next question here. If you're talking to a contractor who wanted to grow his business, because I'm sure none of your competitors are listening right now, what one item would you tell them to add?
Sales. I think building a sales department and understanding that the business that we're in is sophisticated, and taking that approach to properly building the system and being the business and being proactive about the ways that it's being done is important. It's been my experience that some contractors, I'm not here to judge anybody and how they run their business, but many contractors started because they were technicians in the field, and for whatever reason, their circumstances put them in their service vehicle on their own, and they grew their business from that, whether it was from word of mouth or they got into a good opportunity where they had a lot of work and they could kind of grow their business and leverage that opportunity for the future. Many contractors get to a size where there's an issue, and they're not really sure of how their business can get to the next level because that's not really what they were trained for. They were, you know, they were taught, or they were exposed to doing the mechanical side of what it is that we do, and may be very proficient at it. But running a business, there's a whole set of soft skills that you need, and there's a way in which you need to treat people so that they'll grow with you instead of you being faced with high turnover. I think the one single thing is sales, which is, in my experience, something that our industry hasn't really been very good at, but lately we've been recognizing it and trying to understand it and learn how to take advantage of building something that, you know, will help the growth cycle.
No, it makes sense. It's more than just turning a wrench, right? There's a lot more that goes into running a business.
There is a lot more. And on the service side, as you can appreciate, it's more expensive to operate because we need a lot of support. So, yeah, it's if you're going to get into the service business, you have to be fully committed to building the right kind of business. And quality control, customer service, sales, prospecting, that all goes into it.
Well, really appreciate the time. There's maybe one final question I'll get you out of here on. What's the biggest trend you see coming down the road for HVAC contractors that a lot of people don't realize yet? Maybe look at the crystal ball, maybe about a year or two out. Something that should be on people's radars, but simply isn't.
I'm seeing a trend now that customers are beginning to ask for more all-inclusive service agreements. When I was a young person in this industry, I remember that we had full service agreements where we would be responsible for doing maintenance and repairs and sometimes including parts for essentially a fixed sum that whoever the customer was would pay on a monthly or quarterly or annual basis. And then they didn't have to really worry about approving certain upgrades or repairs or service calls or overtime because it was included in the package that they had. And then over time, that model sort of degraded into just basic service or test and inspect, and then the customer would take a risk and pay for everything above and beyond. I see a trend of that turning back into the pay one price model. And I've been a proponent of that for many, many years because we've always tried to be proactive. And the way in which we try to approach buildings is that we are offering a value proposition. As my dad used to say, we may not be the cheapest guys around first cost, but if you consider the investment of the assets and long-term ownership, we're a pretty good value long-term. And by being able to protect an expensive piece of equipment and make it last a few years longer by doing good quality repairs and being held accountable for how those repairs hold up can make a difference in a capital expenditure budget. So we're now talking about money and financial analysis sometimes more than we are talking about cooling or heating. And it's kind of an exciting thing. And the technology and added visibility to what it is that we're doing just lends itself to people being able to kind of measure performance in a different way versus just, is it comfortable and is this about what I should be spending?
Okay, that's a good tip. Well, Bud, like I said, really appreciate the time and the good answers. You really taught us a lot here.
Well, thank you, Kyle, and I appreciate the opportunity, and I hope that everybody enjoyed.
Absolutely.